Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
We saw, right as the Supreme Court redefined marriage, LGBT activists pivoted from the LGB part of the acronym to the T part of the acronym.
1% of 1.2 million abortions a year is 12,000.
I would say there is no such thing as neutral spirituality. Even in the best of circumstances, if you take a classroom where God is not talked about, then that is a value.
The church belongs to Christ. It's not my church. It's not your church. It's not the culture's church. It's Christ's church.
Confessional Lutheran missionary campus pastors, love issues, etc.
I think I know how most evolutionists would answer the question, why don't more scientists, especially in the biological sciences, why don't they seriously question evolution, a Darwin, or what's become of Darwin's theory today? But I don't know how someone who has rejected Darwinism might answer that question. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Monday afternoon, February the 12th. We're going to be talking about a leading bioscientist who questions evolution. Dr. Jonathan Witt will join us here in the first few minutes. Dr. Jean Edward Veith will be with us to talk about the early warning signs of fascism in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. And then in the meantime, we'll be concluding our series on Lutheran piety today, remembering death and the Day of Judgment. Pastor Will Whedon will be alongside for all of that. You can join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. It is Darwin Day today. That means we have to reflect on, well, the fact that he still rules the day in an albeit modified form in the realm of science, but not entirely. There are some who no longer consider themselves subjects of Darwin's rule. We're going to be talking about that here on this Monday, February 12th. Joining us to do so, Dr. Jonathan Witt, Senior Fellow and Senior Project Manager for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, co-author of the new book titled Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Dr. Witt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be back.
Why don't more scientists, especially those in the biological sciences, come to conclusions contrary to Charles Darwin?
Well, that's a great question, Todd. It's a tough one to answer because it goes to the question of motive, and different scientists will have different motives. My co-author, Mati Leishla, who ended up being a very successful, very distinguished scientist in Europe, he looked at himself because his transition to becoming a Darwin doubter was very difficult, he said, because he had this worldview that told him that as a scientist, he could only consider material or natural causes when trying to explain anything. And it was a visit by the Christian apologist Francis Schaeffer when he was living there in Europe that kind of woke him up and made him realize that he had blinders on. And that the worldview you carry around with you subconsciously can be an incredibly powerful filter that keeps you from seeing certain types of evidence. So he was able to break out of that. Why some scientists don't, that's a tough question. I think for some people it may be that they know that there may be a danger to their careers. For other people it may be there may be personal reasons that they may look at the world and see pain and suffering, and they just have trouble believing that there's a God, and so they don't want to go there. So I think there's different reasons for a lot of people, but for Matty, it was ultimately the evidence. He just couldn't ignore the evidence that pointed to design.
So tell us who he is, and tell us a bit of Matty Leishla's story.
Yeah, Matty is a Finnish scientist. He is amazing guy. He was a bioengineer, a bioscientist. He focused on enzymes, sugars. He started the Society for Rare Sugars. He led groups that ended up patenting certain things in the realm of kind of bioengineered microbes. So some of the stuff he's doing sounds like science fiction, but it was real. And he was in Finland. He was in Switzerland. He was a research director at a major international bioengineering company called Kultor. And early in his career, he made the transition from a by-the-book Darwinist to a pro-design, pro-ID guy. He became a very strong Christian along the way. And he managed to do what for some design theorists who are scientists is difficult. He managed to, even in the face of a lot of kind of, I want persecution, putting it a little bit hard, but a lot of back blow, a lot of enemies professionally, he was able to succeed. And so one of the things we do in Heretic is tell the encouraging story of how he was able to succeed. And some of the stories where he gets blowback, where there's attempts to shut him down, shut him up, and he's able to be, he's a very winsome guy. And so you can see, as I worked with him on the book, I could see how he might, in some cases, turn an enemy into a friend, even guys that maybe didn't ultimately agree with him. And he was able to do that in some cases. In other cases, he was not able to. I mean, some of the people got really ugly trying to shut him down. And we're talking about Europe here, which is, you know, even more secular, the academic realm, even more secularized, even more anti-design than the United States. So it's a fascinating story. I felt very, very honored to be able to help him tell it.
So you had mentioned Francis Schaeffer. It sounds like Lysola found both a kind of door left open by that Christian apologist, and also in his own work in bioengineering began to see things that the Darwin blinders, so to speak, had left him blind to before.
Yeah, that's right. He reflected after the Francis Schaeffer talk. He got to thinking back to a couple of earlier times when he'd been challenged by somebody who had challenged evolution, and he thought back and realized, why was I getting so touchy when they challenged me? You know, he had to admit, if it had been a lot of other topics, he would have just had an interesting intellectual scientific conversation about their differences, but he'd got very touchy, and so he came to realize that there was a worldview issue at stake, and he needed to try to take those blinders off. And then in his bioengineering, there was a lot of, and he was on the cutting edge of a lot of that. You know, we're seeing more and more of that in the news, but he's been in the middle of that in the 80s and the 90s. A lot of the assumptions coming out of Darwinism were, oh, it's going to be very easy to improve on nature because the Darwinian evolutionary mechanism is this trial and error, hit or miss sort of mechanism. And so there's going to be lots of junk in our DNA. There's going to be all kinds of easy ways to improve on what evolution has done. And they found that, well, they found through what's called the ENCODE Project and some other research that most of what they thought was junk, in fact, has important function. And they found as they were trying to bioengineer things, that it was incredibly difficult to improve on what nature had done. And so they just kept discovering layer upon layer of sophistication in the, you know, the genetic code, the DNA. They now know, for instance, that there's an error correcting system in the cellular realm. It's like, you know, you have a spell checker in your Microsoft Word or whatever system you use for composing. Well, this is like a spell checker that runs itself and doesn't mess up. Have you ever had your phone where you do voice to text and it tries to correct for you and it comes up with these crazy, you know, words that you didn't mean for it to say? Well, in essence, biology has an error correction system, but one that works incredibly well. I think we give the example of like if you reeled off 200 copies of the complete works of Shakespeare, there might be one error that got through in all those copies. That's how accurate the error correction system is in our cells. So he was encountering that kind of thing, and it just got more and more difficult not to see not just design, but a master designer at work behind all that.
So he's looking at these things, these functions in the cells, at the level of even down to the level of the genome, and he is eventually overwhelmed by how well it is designed. He eventually concludes then that this must be designed. It doesn't only appear to be designed, and that it cannot be the product of random chance and mutation.
Right. Yeah. For him, it was there was negative evidence against neo-Darwinism, and we also look at a lot of ancillary or follow-up or patch theories of evolution that have come along to try to save the day, because a little-known reality of the evolutionary world is that straight neo-Darwinism is in crisis, and so they're trying to pull in all kinds of ancillary patch theories. So we deal with those. But there was negative arguments and negative evidence telling him that a blind evolutionary process just couldn't create the kind of things he was finding in the cellular realm. And then there was positive evidence, because he was seeing all these things that looked like more extraordinary versions of what in our ordinary experience we only ever see intelligent agents creating. We only ever find intelligent agents creating information. And he was finding information code systems, software systems that make the best things that Microsoft or Apple do look like child's play. So is that negative argument, the failure of blind evolution, and these positive evidence of this amazing information technology that he was dealing with on a daily basis in the lab that just kept pushing him deeper and deeper into the intelligent design camp.
You had mentioned a moment ago that neo-Darwinism is in crisis. First of all, what's neo-Darwinism and what crisis is it experiencing right now?
Okay, yeah, that's another good question. Neo-Darwinism is a kind of updated, modern form of Darwin's theory of evolution. Darwin, in a nutshell, his great idea that eventually swept the science world was that everything evolved, all the living things we find around us, all evolve from a common ancestor, at most maybe three or four common ancestors, but the standard version is just a single common ancestor. And it happened one tiny random variation at a time. So you started out, say, with just a little single-celled organism in some warm little pond. That's how he described it in a letter to a friend. And that thing, reproduces, and then eventually there's a slight variation in one of the descendants that's a little bit helpful. And that's preserved because survival of the fittest, and on you go, and it starts branching out, and you get more and more variations, you start getting plants, you start getting animals, you start getting different kinds of animals, but it's all small random variations, and then natural selection. Natural selection comes in and it picks the ones that are more fit. So it's a very gradual process. It's a process that, like a tree, it branches out gradually. And the crisis is that they're finding in many different lines of evidence that there are severe problems building certain kinds of things. Building, for instance, these complex information processing systems that have all these parts that you have to have the various parts in place simultaneously for it to work. So how do you get all that stuff together simultaneously if evolution has to work one tiny little step at a time? When you go into a garage and you decide, I'm going to tinker, this wouldn't be me because I'm not highly mechanical, but my uncle, he goes into a garage and he starts deciding, I'm going to put together a motorcycle or, something fun. He's going to grab multiple parts, and he doesn't have to worry about those individual parts working as he's going along. He can look ahead and gradually bring together, hundreds of parts and gradually bring them together until he has something that functions. Humans, intelligent agents, have foresight. They can look ahead to something in the distance and design it. Neo-Darwinian evolution, just like Darwinian evolution before it, doesn't have foresight. Richard Dawkins, the atheist evolutionist, he admitted this and called it the blind watchmaker. It's got to work at every tiny little step along the way. And that requirement that every tiny little evolutionary step work and function, that's been an Achilles heel for neo-Darwinism. And so they're looking for patches like self-organization and neutral evolution to try to save the day. So we go into those more later in the book and briefly explain why those also don't save the day.
Are there other Darwin-doubting, even design-affirming scientists out there?
Yeah, there are many. They're in the minority, which goes back to your question of, you know, why aren't there more? Interestingly, there was a poll a few years back by the Finkelstein Institute, which is by no means a you know, evangelical, Christian, conservative type of polling organization, and that they polled medical doctors, and they found that 59%, so in other words, you know, almost 6 out of 10 medical doctors were skeptical of neo-Darwinism. Now, when they're vetting and filtering for medical doctors, they're not generally asking them to swear allegiance to Darwin. And so then it's and yet they are teaching them an enormous amount of biology. And they're also learning a very practical form of biology, right? They're having to deal with what actually works, you know, and what actually heals. And when things break in the body, you know, what do you do about that? And what caused it to break? And 6 out of 10 of them are skeptical of evolution. But when you get over into biology and academic biology, you have a filter. It's often difficult to move on up the ladder academically if you are out of the closet, so to speak, as a Darwin skeptic. And so it's not really surprising that you have fewer Darwin skeptics, pro-ID people at the highest levels. We have horror stories. I mean, you may be familiar with the film that came out a few years ago, Expelled. It had Ben Stein as the host, the comedian, political commentator. And it went through and told several stories of scientists who were run out of situations just because they came out and said, you know what, I'm skeptical of Darwinism. So very brave guys, but, you know, a lot of other scientists take note of that and they keep their heads down. So it's not a situation where there's as much academic freedom as we'd like to see. In fact, just today we announced a Discovery Institute, that's who I work for, the Center for Science and Culture, just announced our Censor of the Year Award, and we gave it to Wikipedia for a couple of reasons. One, they have an incredibly slanted and distorted description of what intelligent design is. And then also, there was this major distinguished paleontologist from Germany, Gunther Beckley. He was leader of one of the big museums in Germany. He's got species named after him. So this is a big, big name guy, and he had a Wikipedia page named after him. I mean, you know, about him in English. Well, he came out as a ID proponent and a Darwin skeptic, and guess what happened to his Wikipedia page? It vanished. And they went in and looked at the editor discussions. And from looking at those editor discussions, it was clear that it was because he had come out as a pro-ID, you know, anti-Darwinist, and so they had him disappear essentially. So you get things like that are, you know, almost Orwellian, and some people they don't want to mess with that. They don't want to deal with that, and so they don't go down the path of Darwin skepticism, or if they do, they keep it quiet, keep it to themselves.
Dr. Jonathan Witt is Senior Fellow and Senior Project Manager for the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. He's co-author of the new book titled Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. You can purchase it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Witt, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Todd. It's been great.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Will Wheaton, concluding our series on Lutheran piety. An apt conclusion. Remembering your death, even before it happens, remembering that you are going to die, and remembering the coming of the Day of Judgment, that last of godly habits we'll talk about in our series on Lutheran piety with Pastor Will Wheaton right after this.
We're destined to be Darwin's children this time.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You could even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. PerformanceFitness618.com.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogue, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How was school today, kids?
Crazy! Hector's charioteer got hit by a stone, and his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet.
Sounds like Patroclus was being hot-tempered, rude, and quarrelsome again.
He always is. Dad, what's for supper?
I don't know yet. Supper is such a problem.
If it's a problem, you can use the scientific method to figure it out.
Problem? We want supper. Hypothesis? I think Dad will make tacos.
Actually, I was thinking about spaghetti.
Tacos or spaghetti?
False dichotomy.
Is this the after-school conversation of your dreams? Registration is now open for the 2018-19 school year at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area.
Hey, Dad, how did my violin practice sound?
Kiddo, it sounded epic.
Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org. school.stpaulhamel.org.
People have confused pietism with piety and dumped piety along with dumping pietism. It's resulted in a real confusion about this.
Pastor Will Wheaton, on his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for godliness.
Any thought about dealing with how we actually live our lives is regarded as being, that's law. That's what we've been freed from. We don't have to think about that. Well, no. The whole point is, what does it look like to live with Jesus Christ having been crucified and raised from the dead?
You can meet and hear Pastor Wheaton Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.